We're going to talk about some things. Remember, we're talking about, some of you are, am I on? Because I turned it off. Am I on? Okay. Some of you are going to go into existing places that there may be a building, there may be 20 people left, there, who knows what, but it may be out in the rural. I talked to some of the DOMs in some of these areas, and they've got churches that have been here for a long time, but they cycle down through, and they're just really kind of holding on. And some of you guys may go to an area and claim that area. We're going to just reach this area. And so some of this may help you if you go. And even if you're starting a brand new church, pay attention to what we're going to talk about here, bridging the culture. Let me give you an example before we even start this. The culture basically is the Apostle Paul saying, I'll be all things to all men that I might win some. Okay? Yet, sometimes we come with our Baptist culture, our culture of where we grew up, and we try to transplant it somewhere else. And we Baptists have been notorious for that. If you would go to Pennsylvania, I think Northern Ohio, some places, you'll find churches that are closing down, and they have in the last 20 years, that they started in the 60s when industry started happening. The people from the South moved up north. And the people there started churches by following license plates. They would find the southern license plate and invite them to church. And the church was not a northern church. It became a southern church in the north. When those industries petered out, those churches were left because they had not reached in to the town they were sent to. All they did was made a nice culture break for the people who moved there. This has happened all through the Northeast. And so some of you may find this to be. I'll give you an example of something to pay attention to. I was doing a tour. We do tours in different areas of the country, and we bring church planners. We bring people who can help start churches to population centers or rural or small cities where they're ready to start churches. And we bring them all together, and we put about $10,000 to each one. And so I went to this one. It happened to be in Pennsylvania. And it was raining, and this is a coal mining region of Pennsylvania, okay? So we're all getting into this bus, and this pastor who has come from the South, he says, where's my umbrella? Where's my umbrella? Where's my umbrella? And I'm sort of a straight shooter, and I said to the young guy, I said, why do you need an umbrella? He said, well, because it's raining. And I said, where do you live? He said, I live here in Pennsylvania. I said, do you see these people around here using umbrellas? He said, well, no, I don't. I said, no, they don't use, because their mentality is, I'm a manly man. I work in the coal mines. I work outside. I don't touch an umbrella. That's for you city people. Now, you might not even have thought of anything like this, but this is real live life. And you go prancing into some of these towns with your Gucci's and Uchi's and whatever they are, and they don't mean jack to those people. They think you're an idiot for spending that much money on something that you could have got for $10. So you've lost credibility right there. And we're going to talk about some of these things. So you see, if the people where you're at are not using umbrellas, don't be Mary Poppins out there. All right, that's my message. But if you remember that illustration, you will remember part of what I'm saying here. All right. We're not going to do this activity, so don't worry about it. If you teach this, have your people do the activity in the book. It's really a cool thing. Well, it does. The guy talks about where he moved into a place, he did everything wrong. Then when he started doing according to the culture, God just blessed it. It's just really a cool activity. Don't worry about that. Okay? Characteristics of smaller communities. Remember, I didn't say rural. We're talking about smaller down. They're safe. They're friendly. They're relaxed. They're gossipy. Whoa. How many of you know that from being in rural America? Did you know that Joe's daughter is pregnant? No, I didn't know that. Susie, did you know? Right on through. And before long, everybody knows. That's why they used to ship people off to other towns. They're conformists. Sometimes they're boring. remote, like distant to everything. Go to Montana, and go to Lincoln, Montana, where the Unabomber came from. And you'll know why the Unabomber went there. Everybody's like anti-government. They're just in their own little world. I went there one time to try to help a church, and on the way out, I went to get these cherries that they sell. It's really good in the summer, July. I stopped at this cherry guy who was selling cherries, and I started talking to him. He started hitting me with politics, anti-government, pro-gun, pro-I don't know what. I said, buddy, I said, I'm not from here. I just really want my cherries. My wife's waiting for me. There's no way you're going to win in those at that time. You have to make relationships to get into those conversations. This comes from Tom Neble. You may want to pick up that book, Big Dreams in Small Places. Okay? They're quite religious. Is religious saved? No. Don't misunderstand it. Clean and quiet. These are the kind you see, Andy Griffin, leave your door unlocked. Any of you live in that area now where you can leave your door unlocked and all that? There's not very many places now. You do, bud? Is that right? Okay. You never got robbed?
No. I think we live
more in the outskirts of the town. Okay. No, that's cool. No, it still exists. I remember going to Alaska, and they left their pots of crab, thousands of dollars worth of crab. They left them on the dock, and they went into town to go get whoever was going to get the crab. And I said to the guy, because I was just a tourist at that time, because I try to learn wherever I'm at. Always be a learner. If you can be a learner, you'll know so much about humanity. And I said, buddy, I said, why are you leaving those on the dock? I said, man, I said, I'm from New York. I said, we wouldn't leave a nickel on a dock. And it's this burly guy. I said, son, nobody's son. He said, we have the Alaska law up here. He said, nobody's going to touch them. I just listened. Okay. Well, I'm certainly not going to touch him. He left. I wasn't even going to ask him what the Alaska law is. I was afraid I was like violating it, you know? So I left, and somebody else was around. I said, hey, can you tell me what this Alaska law is? This guy just left all this here. He said, where are you from? I said, well, I'm from you have to call him the lower 48. I learned that. From the lower 48. He said, well, around here, you only steal somebody's stuff once. You don't have another opportunity. I said, well, I understand that from the city. but that's the Alaska law. And so know your culture. And see, if you learn your culture, you're not like an idiot when you get there. But you will, wherever you go. Listen, we're going to, we'll get you laughing, hopefully, about some of the mistakes you make, because everybody makes them. But you have to be aware of them. So this is some of the things of a small town. That's why people go there. That's why the baby boomers are moving there. That's why people who can work remote are moving there. It's a whole new way of doing business now, working remote. They're going to these places to raise their families. Current trends in rural, you need to just know some of these. The number of people working in agriculture fields is declining. 30% of all Americans were farmers in 1920. Today it's 1.9%. Big business has taken over agriculture. Big business. That's a big jump. So what? Many farmers who have lost family farm feel their failures. Some of them are still living there. Sold the family farm, got the money, stayed there. You know, some of the wealthiest people are ex-farmers. You may not realize that, especially in urban areas where the urban's coming out. There's puppies. They're more wealthy. They don't know what to do with all that money. They've not survived the survival of the fittest. You see, it used to be the farmer, the culture is, we're going to survive. You see some of the movies that they have, going to survive. Well, when they sell the farm, it's like this, like a depression. All this family history is gone. And they feel like real failures. And so, you got to understand and how to minister to these people if you're going to go there. That's the so what. You see, does this trend affect any in your areas? I teach this in other areas. Like sometimes it affects the fishing. Alaska, it affects some of the fishing areas. The guys who had the boat and they're fishing, and now suddenly they're no longer in the family business. And it's like this depression that comes over. They really, the oil, the mining. You see, be aware of this when you go wherever you go, because it makes a difference. such a declining economy also. Be prepared to offer great encouragement. These are some suggestions. Preach a series of messages of hope. Starting over as a Christian. Starting over after failure. You don't put it in their face. Hey, dude, you must really feel bad about losing that family farm. You know, no. You know, it's implied, but you try to help them along in that process. Starting over with a new vocation. You know, they may have some money from selling a farm, but they don't know what to do after that. You know, that's why you're there to minister. In small towns, your mother, your father, your doctor, your lawyer, your brother, you're everything. And you need to know how to be everything. It's really a cool place to do ministry. It just really, really is. Be sure you don't fall into the same faulty thinking about your church. If it doesn't grow, if it seems like it's failure, don't fall into that. Fight your own battle. By the way, this is for free. Some of the biggest or best or most faithful pastors battle depression. And listen to me carefully. If you're going into ministry, learn how to battle depression. And help your wife recognize that. Because you need somebody to recognize that because it happens and you need help when that happens. And, you know, sometimes people stay in funks for a long, long time. Sometimes just a day or two. But recognize your funk. I'm one of the few guys who talk about this, but I know that I was in depression for 6 months one time. And there were reasons for it, but I was 6 months.
Has there ever been a study between the correlation of the depression to the sexual fall?
Man, you know, I don't know. I think they've done some studies, but most of the sexual falling has to do with power. And it could be an impossible depression, but it has to do with power. You're in a counseling situation or some woman's looking up to you and you're like the power structure. It has nothing to do with sex. Now, this is not the time or place for that, but J.D., I was asked these questions here, just so you know. But, guys, don't fool yourself. It's not about how good-looking you are or how good-looking she is. It's about power. It's about feeling insignificant, and it could be through the depression, and wanting to feel significant. That's why some of the guys who fall into these things are as ugly as sin. It's not about the stuff that you look for when you're falling in love and all that stuff. It's just about power and somebody who needs to be comforted. So be sure, that's a free one. You can take that out of the tape if you want to. Encourage people to take risk and not to be held to status quo by fear of eventual failure. Encourage your people to take risks. If you're not a risk taker, man, you're going to end up in the county seat church. You're going to have the biggest little steeple in town, and you're going to give your life there, holding people's hands until they die, and you're never going to reach out to another rural town or anywhere else. That's just you. And you're going to get your identity there because you're afraid of failure. And guys, I want to tell you something. From where I sit, that is no way to live. That is not a life. That is existing. Because it lostness. It requires you to get messy. It requires you to get dirty. If you really want to reach lost people, you're going to get messy. Your life's going to get messy. You're going to be risk. You're going to be out late at night. You're going to be with people, you know. I can tell you stories of knives to my throat, death threats. These are all real. I can tell you about looking at for a girl who was committing, she was trying to commit suicide, middle of winter, nobody knew where she was, and we're out with the police looking in the trees and in the woods and in the streets, and finally we're down this one street and I see this thing that didn't look right. There's a cardboard box in the middle of a sidewalk. And I told the cop, I said, stop, that's not right. And all of a sudden we picked this up and here's this girl underneath there. A couple more hours she would have froze to death. You see, this is life, helping people. It's not just worrying about the color of the carpet and how many buildings we're going to build. And it's about people. And if you're in a place, listen to me carefully. Find out where you're responsible. If you're in one church, find out where you're responsible. You're going to hear me say today that you're responsible for one day's journey. I'll save that to the end. That'll make you go, oh, is this guy crazy? Current trends in rural areas. Trend number two. Non-farm town population is increasing. That's interesting. Most small towns are growing. Towns of 2,500 or less grew by 4.9% in the 80s. There is actually a larger population movement to small towns than to the cities. Now, when I first heard that, I went, man, I don't know about that. But it seems to be true. Places that you will find And a lot of this has to do with urbanization, and it has to do with pleasure. All right? The baby boomers are retiring. The baby boomers, you will see, is going to be the largest mission force that ever existed in the United States, or the world for that matter. The baby boomers are retiring with health, with wealth, with education, and all they need is motivation to follow God. And many baby boomers got their wealth by disregarding their relationship with God. And God can call them back, and many of them are moving to places that are nice, that are beautiful, that are relaxing, that are remote, that are rural. And so many of these places are growing because of a retirement type thing or remote working type thing. And so there's a lot of things that are happening in small town America now that really have never happened before. It's not all Andy Griffin. Trend number three, small towns are experiencing great demographic changes. Industry is moving to small towns for cost-effective workforce. That's why my brother here asked the question, the immigrants are also moving to the small town. There's work there. White-collar people are moving to small towns because of suburban sprawl. Retirees are turning to small towns for quality of life. Remember we saw it was slow, it was boring, it was everything that you didn't want, the fast pace, you want to get away if you retire. Reurbanization of America, bringing great conflict to a town or village near you. All right, we'll call this Rurban, R-U-R-B-A-N. If you're in Georgia, some of you are in Georgia, coming Georgia, when you live there, brother, it may have been a small little town of North Georgia, Bumpkins. It's not anymore. It's one of the fastest growing counties, and it's almost like a North Florida county in North Georgia. It's halfway between the Georgia mountains and the city of Atlanta. It is everything that people are looking for. And so the people who are left there, they don't know what to do with this. They were all farmers. And now you get people who are educated or fast-paced, who expect everything done correctly, who don't want to wait in lines. You have this culture clash. And churches don't know what to do with it. You see, many of the churches there were the small churches we've talked about. They were in a little town somewhere, outskirts of, say, in a major city, and they ended up to be a bunch of farmers and people who their families have been at this church for, say, I don't know, sometimes 100 years. And they're like 30 or 40 or 50 people, and they all know each other. And suddenly all these houses build around them, and what happens is we have a conflict. The people say, well, there's a church, I ought to go to it. And the people are saying, we never had this many people. And they have their system locked into place. And the people who come from some suburb place expect to go to a church and get plugged in. You have this conflict of culture. You have the conflict of the farmer who is very frugal and you know, wouldn't buy two pairs of shoes if he had to. And you got these people who come in every Sunday with a different pair of shoes, a different thing. And they go, what's wrong with these people? They're not like us. You see, so if you go into a rural area and the suburbs are moving out to you, you better pay attention to this thing called Rurban. And we'll continue to talk with some of this. This is where we are. Trend four. The new generation of small town residents exhibit a marked decline in spiritual and moral values. A marked decline. One time you could say, oh, that's the safe place. I can tell you a town in North Carolina who was a drug-infested little small town, and so God got a hold of one guy in there, and he changed that whole town in 2 years. The drugs are out. People are being saved. They meet in a little small place. But one guy made a difference in a town of about 300. Moral values, it's rough out there. The National Rural Development Institute says that rural children fared worse than their non-rural counterparts in 34 of 39 statistics. You could look that up. I wasn't going to put all 34 there. But look at this. Immorality, substance abuse, and crime. Why do you think that's increasing in rural America? Mayberry RFD. Why do you think? Some of you older guys will know what that is. Illiteracy? It could, but it's not the primary, but it could have something to do with that in certain areas.
Hopelessness.
Hopelessness in who?
Can't find work. There's no
future
there in a sense.
Okay. Nothing there. Okay? Who's looking for a lot of things to do? Young people. Not just children, but teenagers. It's the biggest meth problems today are in rural America. You can make the meth there. Meth labs in rural, it's almost like the moonshining of days past. Meth is a major thing. Oxycontin, the biggest abusers of Oxycontin is in rural America. All you need is some country doctor to do what you want. Kids are having growing up with no hope whatsoever. There's nothing to do, nowhere to go. But what this is the key. Years ago, they didn't know it. Oh, they knew it a little bit on TV. But now you've got the internet. You've got YouTube. You've got MySpace. You've got all these things where these kids can go. And when they go to one place, it tells them to go to other places, like this whole network of stuff. And so their eyes are being opened to things they never saw before. Okay? And I'm not talking about just pornography and things like that. I'm just talking about life in this fast lane that they have never been equipped to live life in the fast lane. And it's just knocking them for a loop. And if you can remember your young days, you'll understand some of this. I grew up on the streets, so I understand this type of existence. And if you imagine just being out there with nothing. And if you go to these small towns, there really isn't anything. There's not even a place for the kids to hang out in many of the places. All right? So listen to this question. Could this be correlated to the death of small town churches? You see, the small town churches, rural, many of them are dying. So there's really no influence in some of these towns. And so the kids really don't have it. This is where when I started, I said, guys, we better somehow pay attention to the fact that we need a gospel witness in every single community in the United States and Canada. You see, it just seems right that if you're growing up as a kid, you ought to be able to know that that house over there, if the house church or if it's just a Bible study, that that place represents God, Yahweh God, the one God that I've heard about on TV, heard about on internet chat rooms, that one God, that I have a place in my town that will tell me about that God. So that when I'm really down, when I am pregnant and they want to give me an abortion, when all these things happen, I can be connected to that one person, if it's one person, or one small group, they call themselves a church. You see, it is important that every town have some type of gospel witness. This is why we almost need to not talk about church planting. We should talk about just impacting lostness. How is it that we can go to these places and have a Bible study, whether it's at a community hall or a house or whatever? How do we as Southern Baptists, as believers, make sure that everybody within our sphere of influence, every place, people group and place, has a gospel witness? You see, if I ever left NAM and went back somewhere, I would make sure not only that every person in my community had a gospel witness, which I lived all my ministry, but I would say, man, I've just touched the surface. Now I go back, I have to make sure that everybody within a day's drive from me and my people have a gospel witness. That's my responsibility. You see, friends, we need to broaden ourselves from the one church, one pastor, one success. Now, let me tell you what started this with me. The Apostle Paul, I got tired of hearing pastors complaining how abused they were, how much of a failure they were, how rough life was. I've counseled pastors and young mission pastors from the time I was a mission pastor. And for some reason, I must have the face that they all come to and say, well, you know, help me. I don't know why. But to make a long story short, it was like, God, why all the trouble? I read in the scripture that the Apostle Paul could be beaten and stoned and shipwrecked and he, all this stuff happened to him and he just bounced right back up, do it again. I said, he must have been crazy or he wasn't human. Because the humanity I see is very frail and very weak, very self-centered, very worried about how they feel. And I prayed. I said, God, you've got to give me an answer because I have to tell the answer wherever I go. It was in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. If you read all the things that Paul did, at the bottom of all of this, he says, and besides this, I always thought it was negative, and it is negative, but it's really a positive thing. He says, besides all of this, I have the care for all the churches. You see, when we deal with one church on one corner, with one set of people, whether they're 30, 300 or 3,000. We're like a family who was stuck on a vacation in a cabin with three kids, and it rains every day. After the first day, they start getting on each other's nerves. The second day, the wife is saying to the husband, "Why'd you bring us here?" The third day, the husband's getting on the wife, "Can't you control those kids?" The fourth day, they're all over each other, ready to kill each other. And churches and pastors who only deal with one ministry in one place end up just solving the problems of that group of people. And Paul said, man, that's not it. You see, I have other ministries and other churches. So if there's a trouble here, if I'm getting stoned here, stoned at that time, guys, was with rocks. Okay? If I'm getting stoned here, then, man, I know that my brother Titus or Timothy, they're having great success over here. Or I know that church in Philippi, the one that gives me great joy, man, they're doing it. You see, when you lock yourself in one church or one place, you have set yourself up for being depressed and feeling like a failure and not being too able to accomplish that which God has put you on the earth to accomplish. It took me 24 years to learn that. If you can learn it from some old dude like me today, you will have great, great success in where God places you. And let me tell you something. I'm one of the guys that says, oh, he did great and he did this and he did that. No, I look in the mirror now and what could have been done. Oh, man, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame. I may have 20 more years left in my life, and it's a whole different ballgame. And I hope to impart that to you. But let's go on. You understand what I'm just saying? Don't look at that one little place. Some of you worried about your one little family. I told you, man, God take care of that. Angel. Am I afraid? Oh. No, not necessarily. No, I'm more referring to if God places you somewhere, wherever that is, if that's between you and God. Even if, say, it's a big church, okay, and you're there, don't just look at it at that place on that corner and the people God sends you, because you'll be deceived at what your success is. Look at it like an army. If I had it to do all again, I would take my people and make sure that each of them had a significant ministry outside the church. And I was successful in bringing them out, but not totally successful. You see, because what they did, they get frustrated. You know, if you look at the average Baptist church, a guy's a deacon, then he's a Sunday school, then he does the books, then he's this. And so he makes like a circle. And they're tired of that circle. We need to release them to go to another town and bring a Bible study, a new dimension into their life. We need to take a couple and say, go to this place, which is one day's journey on Saturday, and do a kids club over here. Go and take a survey in this little town where nobody is and find a person of peace there that we can use their home to start a house church. You see, it's all new. That's what Paul was all about and his whole entourage. We have become one person and one church, and our success and failures right there. And the average pastor is miserable. What I'm talking about is a kingdom approach. The other one is, we don't like to call it that. It's a survival approach. I have to feel good about me, so I'm going to put all the effort here because I don't know of anything. I think it's ignorance, Jack. I really do. I think we've been taught that model. Guys like myself have to take responsibility for continuing to teach that model. And now we have to go forth and help this other model to come forth, which is a biblical model, by the way. Okay? Jesus said, I came to go to these other places. So anyway, this is all, you can take this, roam around, ruminate on it. You know, if you think it's all crazy, then that's okay. I'm here in my experience telling you, man, if I had to do it all again, if I were 30 years old and I sat where you sat, I'm 54, that 25 years, well, right now, all the people saying, oh, man, it's been significant. No, not even close to what it could have been if somebody would have taught me these things. That's all I'm saying. So am I saying my life's a failure? No. It took me all these years to learn these things to be able to tell you. Now, if you grasp it, like my son is grasping it, he's setting himself up in a larger town so that he can reach all the little towns around him. That's in his strategy. That's what he promotes in his prospectus. You see, so I taught one guy. All right? He's got to play it out. So hopefully you guys will grasp what we're talking about. And that's the way to impact culture. I would want a gospel witness in everything that I could control. Adjusting to the new culture. This is kind of funny. When you go to a new place, you're going to go how quaint it is for the first week or two. You know, oh, this nice little coffee shop. Oh, this nice little lady down the street whose dog barks, but it's a cute dog. You know, and, you know, all the people are so nice here. It's not like the city. These people actually talk to you, you know, and all of this stuff. Well, after a while, well, it's not like home. When my wife moved to Georgia the first week she was there, she said, we came from Florida where people are nasty. She said, man, they are. I mean, seriously. They said, these people talk to you. They're so nice. They want to help you. We were there about 2 months. She said, these people never shut up and leave you alone. She said, every time I go, they ask me, can they do something else and something else? And we have a handicapped son, and nobody's ever nice to handicapped people, I'm telling you. It's like they just stare at trying to figure it out. And these people in Georgia, they're so nice and all of this. And so, you know, every time she goes to the store now, Greg, or he's 33, he's like a standout. You know, everybody's like, brr. She says, man, I'm tired of that. You know, I just want to go and get my stuff and leave. So, you see, at first, everything's like, ooh. Then it kind of sort of sinks in. You know, well, this really isn't like home. This is not what I'm used to. It may even be nice, but it's not what I'm used to. I don't know how to deal with this. And then after a while, then you start changing. Then you go through that period and you go, well, it's starting to make sense. This is how these people were brought up. This is their culture. This was a small town. Now it's changing. Those people don't know what to do with it either. They're not used to people like us from the city. But this is who it is, and we then start adjusting to the culture so that we can reach the people there. And what happens is you learn that it's not about you anymore. You always constantly learn that your whole life. It's not about you. I have a saying that God's working 99.9% of the time everywhere that you're involved with, and only 1/10 of that percent, it's about you. Most of it is about what's happening around you. We like to make it about us. You see, so that's why you need to look what the people are saying, who you need to talk to, who you need to help, who you need to be nice to, all of the stuff, what's happening around you. Then it's the I like it phase. When it's the I like it phase, when you're somewhere, it's usually maybe a year or two into it, sometimes it's sooner, you can laugh about your cross-cultural mistakes. You know, you can then say, oh man, you know, I really blew it. I thought that, you know, this neighbor really wanted me over every day, but she really didn't. She was just trying to make me feel comfortable. You know, you learn some of these idiosyncrasies, all right? You learn the Alaska law, if you will. How do we successfully learn the culture? These are just some hints. Get out with the people, no matter where you are. If it's an office job, get out of the office. If it's a church, get out of the church. If it's a pastor and you have your office in your home, get out of the office. Socialize. Go to the football game. Go help with the practice. Be part of if you know how to play soccer, go help coach. Help be a part of it. Be a part of that small community. Don't put yourself in a thing and then expect people to come to your church. You see, you need to be where they are. If they're ranchers, go learn how to ranch. When I was in Missouri going to school, I learned how to castrate a calf. I did it once, and I'm happy I did it once. That's the end of it. All right? No, really. But why did I do that? Because this was their culture. It was a farming. They had these things. Come on, let me show you how to do this. Well, I thought I was going to watch. You don't watch in small town. You do. They say, here, grab this, hold this, tie this, cut this. You know. I wanted to cry after that was all over. But it's a different culture. Wherever God sends you, maybe I shouldn't have used that as an example. I'm sorry. This is on tape. I'm sorry. Next time I'll use a different one. But that's just, you know, that happened. So JD's over there turning red for me, okay? Here's the deal. We can cut all that out. But just be a... Never mind. Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Get me out of this, will you? But that's all a part of it, guys. And here's what we do. I had a guy one time come from Georgia to Pennsylvania. And he talked like this. And he kept talking like this. And his mouth even went like this. And nicest guy, I'm telling you what, the guy, he was a saint. I mean, what a great pastor. But the people in the north wouldn't give him the time of day. Because when he was telling his story, they would answer it before he finished it. And they were going, this guy's stupid. He can't get to the end of his sentences. You know what I'm saying? You have to make adjustments. That's why it's important for us to raise up indigenous people. Now, some of you are going to go to different cultures. That's why we're here. But your job is to then raise up indigenous people who don't have to go through this pressure. These things are causing more aggravation than we need to go. Become a student of the culture. What's important to the people? What rituals do they hold dearly? In most small towns, whether it's six-man football or 11-man football, if it's a Hoosiers in Indiana, some of these sports are their town. That is their town. And you're going to be asked on Saturday night, how'd you like the football game? It's implied that you went to it. And buddy, if you're a pastor and you don't do that, what are you thinking? But we have pastors all over who don't think like that. I don't like football. Well, who asked you what you like? Did God ask Paul, do you like getting hit with rocks there, Paul? I don't think so. All right? It's really not about us. But we've been taught that, it's about you. Be safe, be comfortable, be American. God said, be my servant. Be all things to all people. Man, small town, you better learn right quickly what that is. Learn to hunt, learn to fish, whatever it is. And if you're gifted at some of those things, pick a place where you can do that. Mr. Wyoming, wherever it is, man, you look like a Mr. Outdoorsman there. You tromping through Wyoming's rough. It's beautiful, but it's rough. It is. You got to be something special. So use it. Some of you are equipped like that. Use it. Go back home. Be a student of the culture. What power structures do they hold? You know, in some places, you don't make fun of the mayor. That mayor is somebody's sister or brother. You know, it's all different. With old judgment. Man, when you go to a new place, just chill. Don't be yapping about the people and the way they do business. They've been doing that for 100 years. They're not going to change because you walked into Dodge. All right? Remember the reason. 1 Corinthians 9:22 is simply, Paul says, I'll be all things to all men that I might win some. Building on their strengths. Use what you have and don't try to copy what you know of large churches and programs. All right? If I could rephrase this, forget what you know and go with what God shows you. That's that idea of getting on your knees before God to reach the people around you. Use the two eyes. The first eye is intimacy. Do large churches really have intimacy? Small groups. And if they have leaders in small groups, that's good. But if they're just small groups, it ends up with the blind leading the blind. Especially if that's their discipleship training way of doing it. In a small church, you're going to have intimacy with the community and with the people in your church. The second eye is involvement. We're going to talk about each of these. Interactive preaching. Look at this involvement. Preaching is different in a small town. You know, don't think that you're going to come in with your PowerPoints. And I know everybody makes fun of NAM with our PowerPoints. I just do it to keep me on track. If I didn't have these PowerPoints, I'd be telling you guys stories and having you laughing and crying. You know, I'd just be different. I do this to keep me on track. But don't think of this show and go in rural America. In fact, you know that most people in rural America, they don't care. If they would hit the lotto and they could make their church big and beautiful, they probably wouldn't even do that. To them, it's like their barn. It's functionable. It functions. Why are you getting so upset over these things, preacher? And you go into some of these places and you try to do what you think is best in the suburbs and the city, and they're going to think you're loony wasting their money like that, wasting their time. It's just really very interesting. Use object lessons, even during the sermon. Ask questions, you know. Expect them to talk to you. I can remember the first time I asked a rhetorical question, somebody answered it. I forget. It was really something really wacky. It was like, I shouldn't say it. I won't say it. But it was like a sin. How many of you ever thought about this? Oh, yeah, I did that. You know, I didn't realize where I was. And so in a small area, if you don't want an answer, don't ask a question. Allow time for the congregation to ask. Have a little bit. Now, you guys understand that? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I say, I mean, you guys, you with me? You got this? Are we talking? You know, almost like that Joan Rivers. You know, can we talk now? Are we getting it? You know, ask members to look at your text and give feedback. I've never done this. I know some guys who have. I just am not real comfortable personally. But if I ever had to, and I had guys who wanted to, let them give you application. You see, for me, the challenge as a pastor is to know the culture well enough that I can make application that they can relate to. It's like a challenge to keep me on target. To me, this would take me, for me, out of the loop. Invite spontaneous comments after you preach. And that's not sitting at the back and expecting the old ladies to go, oh, that was nice, Pastor. Oh, you got out on time, Pastor. All right. I spoke to a church one time, and this lady, I said, open your Bibles, please. I heard my wife and my son open their Bibles. I said, man, I'm in trouble. I preached this thing on Elijah. I never forget this. I was in the thing. A lady slept through the whole time. When I went to the door to shake the hands, the lady said, that's the best message I ever heard on that subject. I said, lady, you're snoring. You know, I said to my wife, this is crazy. But they'll tell you some real things if you ask. Creatively involve others in your service. Let the man read the scripture. Let things happen differently. Have participated in worship. Develop used choirs and psalms, whatever they have. But remember, in truly rural, do not do anything that they cannot reproduce. Do not do anything that they cannot reproduce. In other words, if your wife's coming in and say you're starting a Bible study, a house church, and you're there, and suddenly there's this person, what did I do? Suddenly there's this person that you know that is this great singer or something. Don't bring them in to show off, because they'll be intimidated, and somebody else who could possibly sing will say, oh no, I'll never do that. Remember that lady who came here? You see, you got to keep it within the indigenous, what they can handle. That's a very important principle, and many people forget about it. You can just read this. Children, rural people love children. I believe city people love children too, but we don't allow them that opportunity sometimes. Suburban, we don't allow it. Instrumental music, worship team, young people. We used to have people, when we did this, we would have the music that the people liked. So if somebody from the congregation was singing, they would sing the music they liked. And that kept it all even for everybody. Have sharing times, change order service. I would have a prayer time. For me, if you're going to develop spiritual disciplines, have a time where your people can come, whether it's a small house or it's a little church building or whatever. Have a time where they can come up and just meet with their God sometime during the service. Not the invitation, before that, as they prepare themselves to hear the Word of God. There's all kinds of things you can do. Finding your church's niche. Question, comment, anything. I'm running fast here. I know that. Most successful churches intentionally limit their ministries. Do a few things well. You probably heard this in seminary. Do one thing excellently. I'll tell you what, I think the best way into any rural community is with the children, if they trust you, and most of them will if you do things right. Be known as that group of people. You can do this with mission groups, you know. As you prepare the surface for a church start, you bring mission groups there in the summer or on Saturday, whenever you can get mission groups, and they go out there and reach the children, care for the children. Eventually, you'll start reaching the parents or adults. Identify the gifts of ministry person. Find where spiritual gifts are. Identify the community's needs. Ask these questions. These are good. They were so good they went fast. Who are the people who are overlooked? Wherever you go, ask this question. People groups. Now, when I say people groups, I'm not talking about white, black, Hispanic. People groups are, in any group of white people, you have all kinds of people groups. You might have ranchers. You might have business people. You know, you have people groups. You have the poor. You have the wealthy. All mixed. Think of people groups. People are not being reached. What are the needs, and to which one of these needs could you respond? If you put, these are great questions if you ask them. Beating the Walmart church. All right, we've got to get through this. How much time I have on this session? Where'd Carrie go? We're getting late? All right. Don't come at the Walmart church. Say you're in the middle of rural somewhere and there is a small town of, say, 10,000. Don't try to compete with that church. Okay? You'll have people from your town driving all over. You'd go to Utah, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado. These people are driving distances to go to the one church at the major population center. We need to bring little churches out where they are. So don't try to hit that church head on. You're not going to make it. Do your own thing better than they do theirs. Have intimacy. Have things like my son is starting a church in a little cafe kind of thing. And he made a deal with the people that he'll buy everybody who comes to that church service. He's now in public worship on Sunday. About 25 people have been doing it since like July. And he buys lunch for every one of those people who come to church. He says, by the way, we're meeting. There's a restaurant right on the other side of us. They're going to bring food in for us. And we'd like to buy your lunch, whoever's here today. And they sit afterwards and they eat and meet. And he has his first visit with these people right after church, anybody who visits. He's using that whole thing to work together. Don't be afraid to think out of the box. You're going to pay rent anyway. Pay it on food. Pay a little extra, but give yourself a chance. Isn't it one of the hardest things? How do you get to that home after they visit? In many areas, it is. You got that visit right there. If I had to do it again in a rural or small place, I'd figure out how to eat right after service. I would. Not that's because I'm fat. I'm just talking about for real reasons. All right? Offer a specialized line of products, whatever it might be. Who knows? What? Use your imagination. You guys are gifted. God created humanity creatively. Use what God has given you to offer something to that little community that never was offered before. Condition change, survivors adapt. Okay? That can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. Sometimes survivors just survive. Some of these small towns, some of the churches you might go to have to restart, they have honored God by surviving. But that's why they're not growing. Because they're in a survival mentality. You need to break that by changing. Involve the people. Have to involve God's people and be enthusiastic. Okay? That's beating the one you can't monitor what you're doing. Either adjust to new culture or bust. Mission specialist, Paul Hebert. In relating to another people, we need to deal with our feelings that distinguish between us and our kind of people and them and their kind of people. Identification only takes place when they become part of the circle of people we think of as our kind of people. You will know if a person belongs to your church when they start saying, what? Our church. We. Well, that's how they'll feel about you in the rural setting. When you start saying, oh, we went to our high school. Oh, we went to our supermarket. It's probably only one. When you start saying that, well, oh, yeah, I met our magistrate. Or I went riding with our policeman. You see, these are very important. When you'll know you've made it when you start thinking that way. And when you start thinking that way, then you have a chance of people to see your sincerity. If this does not happen, you will not reach rural America. Adapting to culture. Man, I got to move. 1 Corinthians, we already said that. Be all things to all people. Thought for the hour. If you pastor an existing church in a rural or small town area, you may have to choose between the past and the future, between clinging to old ways and having a vital church for your children and grandchildren. This is if you go to a church to restart it, if it's almost dead or dying, you have to decide and help people understand, this is what brought us to the dance. This is what almost killed us. It was good until then. This is good for you. What's going to happen now? Where do we go from here? Where do we go with the changes in where we live? Or if we want any changes. This is a replay. We're going to end in a minute. Learn your community's culture before you make changes. Shape your ministry to the culture of the community. Pace change to the congregation's readiness. Take your cookie-cutter pastor, throw them away. Now, this is hard because some of you guys are young. You don't even know who you are yet, right? I mean, come on. I've been that age. You don't know. You're trying to figure it out. You're going, God, you're saying things. I don't even know who I am. That's good. That's fine. That's where you live, man. You're not going to change that. But take what you have and just kind of, let the people tell you who you need to be. That's what Paul was trying to say. You don't give up on your message. You give up on maybe who you are. Live adventurously where God has placed. Oh, what's that word? Break. Any questions before we go on that break? That's kind of helping you with your culture wherever you go, either church starting or restarting a small church. Okay, what time, brother? 15 after. We're staying right on time here. I'm amazed. Yeah, we'll have lunch at 12.